Nine Boys Golf Show. All about golf, from putting to driving, from hooks to whatever. Now, here's your host of the Back Nine Boys Golf Show, Rich Stiles.
And a good morning to you. Hope it's a great day for golf. Don't forget to hydrate if it is. The Back Nine Boys Golf Show is brought to you by Mizuno Golf. Reach beyond by Club Car, the leader in sport, utility, and personal vehicles. By RSM, proud sponsor of the RSM Classic, giving back to our community. By Bridgestone Golf, get fitted for your Tourbe ball today. And by the club at Sea Palms. On the show, we're going to kind of do a little bit different. We're going to do four interviews today. One with Jack DuBois, 14-year-old from Clinton, North Carolina, who's down here trying to improve his golf game and his mental aspects of the game, working with Dr. Mo Pickens. We're also going to talk with elite instructor and Keith Mitchell's instructor from the Sea Island Golf Performance Center, Chan Reeves, who basically, you'll find out in the interview, was in his early life taking lessons here, and now he teaches here. And we're going to talk with Bo Welling Design, who is refreshing the Ocean Forest Golf Course, and we'll talk to him about that and some of the other courses that he's worked with, including Eagle Point in North Carolina, PGA Frisco down near Dallas, and the Atlanta Country Club. And then finally, we'll talk with David Ulrich, Fairways for Freedom. They empower injured veterans, and they do it through the game of golf and other aspects. And I'm excited to be able to talk to him about that, talk about giving back. That's just another great way to do that. But first, let's talk with 14-year-old Jack DuBois from Clinton, North Carolina, who is very focused to improve his game of golf. And here's my interview with him.
Jack, golf obviously is a passion of yours. When did you pick it up?
So I've probably been playing for most of my life, but I decided I really wanted to get serious into golf about 2 years ago. That's really when I started tournament golf.
And how old were you when you started, and was it your dad that got you into it, or were you just watching Tiger and all the other guys playing?
Well, I live on a golf course, and I'd love to go to a PGA Tour event. And so, my dad played golf a good bit, but it really just living on a golf course, going out and having fun, really what started it.
Okay, and now you're here at Sea Island. You're working with Dr. Mo. You've worked with him for 2-3 years. Why did you come and start to work with Dr. Mo? What was it about Dr. Mo that made you want to come down and improve your mental aspect?
Well, see, I wasn't a bad golfer when I started, but my mental game was just terrible. I was thinking, my thinking process was just not there, and it would cost me tournaments. And we had a great friend recommend us coming down to Sea Island. We have family down in Brunswick, and I needed Dr. Mo to be a key part of my golf game, and I'm starting to play a lot better doing the things he's taught me.
So the mental aspect, I mean, a lot of people can play golf. I mean, that's easy for them to do, but sometimes that little thing between our ears just kind of gives us some issues. So what have you been working on specifically with Dr. Mo?
The biggest thing is like leaving bad shots behind, and we're working on, a consistent routine. So when you hit those bad shots, you're not getting out of your routine. You keep repeating that process. You don't get too fast. You stay in that rhythm, so that when those bad shots come, the train doesn't go off the tracks.
And the routine is very important to Dr. Mo, and the routine should help you forget, because he also teaches you to have a very short memory.
Yes, sir, he does. And so I'm getting a lot better with that, and keeping your composure on the golf course and just thinking of other things after shots, and just thinking of one shot at a time will keep you in that right frame of mind for the round.
And thinking of it as one shot at a time that's ahead of you, you also have to think about it. The last shot you hit, you need to forget about, because you got to think about the shot you're on right now.
Yes, sir. That's 100% correct. As soon as you hit that shot, good, bad, or indifferent, you forget about it, and you're going up to the next shot thinking, that routine you're about to do and what you need to do to get this shot close to the hole.
So you've been working with Dr. Mo for a couple of years. You say your game has improved. Is it your game in general, course management, the mental aspects, or just a combination of everything?
Well, I also work with Miss Gail Peterson, so my swing is my mechanics of my swing are much better, and my swing's been there, and the mental piece just hasn't. So now everything's starting to come together, and everything's come around. So now I finally have it together where I can go out and play tournaments and post really good scores.
And you've been working with Gail for a while. What has she been helping you with? What is the best aspects of your game?
You know, I like to say that I feel like I can go play whatever yardage, and if it's a long, you know, I'm only 14 years old, so I don't hit it crazy far, but I can get up and down pretty well.
So Gail's been working with you on the short game. Dr. Moe's been working with you on the mental game, and all that is beginning to come together.
Yes, sir, it is. It is.
And what about college? What are you thinking about college-wise at this point?
Well, we're here down at Sea Island with the SEC tournament right outside, so I'd love to be playing for one of these SEC schools one day.
And you obviously would like to go on a golf scholarship, like to play on the team, be one of the top five that travel on the team. What would that mean to you, and is there a favorite SEC school?
Well, you know, everybody has their favorite. I'm a big South Carolina fan, but I want to keep it open-minded, definitely. These are all really big schools, and you get an offer from them, you take it, you know.
And do you want to play pro golf?
I would love to play pro golf. I feel like, you know, I'm training down here like the pros are. I have pro instructors, and you practice like one and keep putting in the work, and you'll get there one day.
And after you have your first win, you and I can do another interview?
Yes, sir. That sounds great.
Jack DeBose, Clinton, North Carolina. Coming up, we're going to talk with Chan Reeves, who now teaches where he used to give and get lessons. CJ's on Mallory Street across from Parker's on St. Simon's Island is the island's oldest eatery. Maybe that's because those who've experienced CJ's one-of-a-kind taste with their thin crust and signature deep dish crust, nothing else will compare. Everything is made daily, all the ingredients, including the fresh hoagies, the meatballs, the salads, the salad dressings. Check out the menu at cjsitalianrestaurant.com. Graham and Ada do a fantastic job and have a great crew who gives unbelievable customer service. You can call in, pick it up right at the door, or you can have it delivered through DoorDash. Either way, you got to check it out. cjsitalianrestaurant.com.
Hi, this is Adam Shupak with Golf Week Magazine, and you're listening to the Back Nine Boys Golf Show.
And welcome back. I'm Rich Stiles. Coming up, we're going to talk with Chan Reeves, one of the elite instructors at the Sea Island Golf Performance Center. After that, we're going to talk with Bo Welling. Bo Welling Design, who is refreshing Ocean Forest and has worked on other golf courses around the country. And then we're going to talk with David Ulrich with Fairways for Freedom, empowering injured veterans. Stick around for that interview. It will be very interesting about what they're doing and helping out. But here's my interview with Chan Reeves. We had a chance to sit down the other day, and I asked him a couple of questions, including, does he feel weird about teaching where he used to take lessons?
Chan, how does it feel to be teaching now at the Sea Island Golf Performance Center, where prior to, when you were younger, you were taking lessons?
Well, it's great to be back here. The place is, the facility is unbelievable. The area, living here has been great. But, you know, when you stand out on the tee and Jimmy Hodges watched me hit golf balls, gosh, what, I guess 40 years ago now or something like that. I just said that out loud.
Yeah, right.
Within 50 yards of where I'm teaching someone right now, and Mr. Love was always there. So it's been a great experience. I still look back at some of the things that Mr. Love and Jimmy did. Cause I was down here. I probably took Mr. Love gave my first lesson probably when I was 11 or 12 years old. And then I started working with Jimmy Hodges, and Jimmy until my sophomore year in college. So it's been great. Facilities are awesome. Like I said, living here has been incredible. So it's a little bit of a change of pace from from where I was in Atlanta. I was very fortunate. I was at the Atlanta Athletic Club for, I'd started my 25th year. But I'd been in Atlanta since 87 when I went to school to play college golf there. So it was a long time in Atlanta. And it's just a different vibe. It's a different environment. It's much more laid back. And responsibilities are different as well. Up there at the athletic club, I was the director of instruction and had five people staff-wise underneath me. So everything, good or bad, mostly bad, it seemed like, kind of fell in my lap when something didn't go right. And here, I just do my instruction. I teach. I don't have those responsibilities.
All right, let's talk about TrackMan. You said you use TrackMan and video, but you use TrackMan as a bonus, not necessarily as 100% of what you need to work on.
Right. We have TrackMan in each of our bays. So when we go in and do video, if someone, I can show them the path of the golf club, for example, but TrackMan will give them a number to it. So you can look at that and see it. So I use it a little bit more as a, in addition to kind of back what you're saying, look, the golf club's moving this direction, or the weight. When we use the pressure mats, I mean, those things are, they just verify what you're doing. I'm not someone that's opposed to technology, but I'm probably a bit old school in looking at kind of how I was taught with divot patterns and ball flights and those types of things. And then when we do the video with TrackMan on it, I can show, okay, look, well, this is you're four right here on the path coming down. So I'll do it for that. But and then I do a lot of the TrackMan stuff, especially for my juniors with wedge stuff, trying to get the numbers for wedges. The carry yardages and things like that, so right. We can figure out gapping for them.
All right. Do most people, let's exclude the pros at this point, college guys, because they're probably pretty good at golf anyway. They just want to kind of get that extra step. Do most amateurs that come and work with you, do they really know what they're doing wrong, or do they think they know?
Well, most of them think they know. But generally speaking, someone would see the obvious, but what they would miss, that would be, for example, that would be C or D. They missed A and B, which caused it. So my job is to give them the start of it, where it started. It's easy to see that the club swinging across the golf ball and to the left and you're hitting a big slice. Well, that's what they see, and all their buddies have said, oh, you're over the top, or whatever the term is. What they don't realize is the grip has gotten so weak that the club face is wide open. They have no choice but to swing over the top. So finding the kind of the root of the problem, where it began, and then when you do that, if you can work on that aspect of it, then maybe two or three other things get better without them having any idea. The last thing I want to do is someone come in and have six things to work on.
Right.
If I can give them two, if I can give them a setup thing plus one or two drills to do to get them going the right direction, and let other things get better without them actually working on the other things, they don't even have to know that that's what's going on.
Right.
Sometimes it's better for them not to know what's going on, because if you tell them that, then they're going to work on A, B, C, and D. I only want them working on A and B.
Right.
Okay. How does the golf swing start? Is it with your shoulders, your hips, your hands, your arms? How does the golf swing really start?
I think it's a good question, but I would say that for different people, it starts different ways based on body type, build, what tendency they have. I mean, there's a combination of arm swing and body rotation in the golf swing. Some people will feel it start more with the arms moving the body. Some people will feel the body moving the arms. It depends on the type of player and where they are and which direction they've gone too far. So definitely it has to, the club has to move away from the golf ball, and the weight has to move into the right side. It has to load to the right side. And then obviously it has to move back to the left, going into impact and through. So it, again, I think it can be either based on the person, based on the student, gotcha, and what you're dealing with, but it's a combination of both. If you see someone that's 95% body, they're in trouble. If you see someone that's 95% arms, they're in trouble. So you're trying to find the mix, and again, I think it can feel in reality. I do this a lot with students. I can tell you where the club needs to be, but I can't hand you the feel. because your feel and the next person, you know, 2 hours from now, their feel would be totally different. You own your own feels. I only give you positions and show you how to get there.
Right, and most people, swings are all over the board. I mean, you look at a guy like Jim Furyk, I mean, you probably could never teach that. But a lot of people, most important thing is not necessarily how you get to it, but that you do get to impact at the right position of the club.
Right, a lot of different kind of paintings of where the golf club is going to go, and it's going to have a different visual as the look of a golf swing. But if you take all those guys and you move them pretty much from about bell tie coming down to bell tie coming through, they're going to be pretty similar. That's why you know who they are, because they're that good, right?
Yeah.
So they all do that well. So finding those spots and trying to make it as fundamental as possible where you don't miss. The last thing you want to do is have a golf club, for example, that's rolling way to the inside and has to move back over. If we can get grip and setup and posture and takeaway done, if we can get those types of things done, that only makes that area from bell tie to bell tie easier to get to.
All right, you're working with Keith Mitchell, you're working with Michael Thompson. Keith played in the Zurich. They had a great 3 days and not a very good Sunday.
Right.
And it seemed like second shots, chipping, and obviously putting from too far away for par didn't necessarily help them. How are you helping Keith at this point?
Well, I'm actually seeing him today because he's playing Wells Fargo next week. I've worked with Keith since he was, I want to say it was after his junior year of high school when he was in Chattanooga, and he had committed to Georgia. So he came down because I was close to Athens, and we started working then. So that's been 13 years. It's very basic, very fundamental stuff that we stick to. We try not to get caught into too much going on and making things harder than they are. We work a lot at the pace of the golf swing. We work a lot at pivot and how he gets into his right side better going back. We work length of swing, sometimes pace of swing if it gets too fast off the ball, which is his tendency, especially the longer the golf club, because he has so much speed. When he does that, then the swing gets long, and we start trying to just slow it down, get the tempo better. It's interesting because people think there's this, you know, well, with this player, with a tour player, you're working on these really, really complicated things. We're really working on even more basic things than you probably are with your average student.
Right.
Trying to get them to be more consistent. The difference is Keith doesn't want to curve it to the right. He doesn't want to curve it to the left. He wants the ball to hit a peak, and he wants it to drop one way or the other. So little things like that. I mean, I think that format last week is obviously the guys – it blows my mind that guys shoot those low scores and foursomes, you know, with the alternate shot. It's mind-boggling to me that people can do that, because if it starts going really well, it can go well. If it starts going a little off, it can get bad quickly.
Right.
And next thing you know, you've hit a bad tee ball and you put your partner by it starts to kind of snowball against you. So, I mean, I we'll work today. We talked some yesterday about what we're doing today. Looking at some posture things to simplify things and get him in a little bit better position at address. So nothing complicated. I mean, Keith's been one of the better ball strikers, definitely one of the best drivers of the golf ball tour for years. So most of it is really, really basic stuff with alignment and posture and length of swing. I mean, the same thing I worked with a 14-year-old yesterday afternoon. Same type of thing.
Yeah, but their basics are much different from my basics or other amateurs.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, their basics are at a different level.
Absolutely, 100%. So there, it's a little bit – you're looking at it a little tighter, a little, you know, more definite in what you're doing, but it's still the same stuff. It's just, okay, well, if Keith gets a little bit – if your average student gets a club a little bit outside, okay, that's fine. Keith gets a little bit outside, maybe we don't want that. And also knowing tendencies. You know,
right.
At that level, you know, for a tour player, we're working together, right? I mean, I need to know what he wants to feel. I need to know what he wants the golf ball to do. I already know his tendencies for working with him for a long time. So you're trying to stay kind of within that, and you're working together. A 14-year-old, it's basically a dictatorship. I'm telling him what to do.
Right.
I mean, this is what you're going to do. This is how many times you're going to do it. These are the drills for it. And I'll see you when you get back here. So it's different with that, in that aspect of it. It's much more of a, you know, it's fine for a tour player to say, I don't really like that feel. I don't really like that thought of the takeaway. I don't really like, okay, fine. Well, let's go a different direction. We're going to get to the same spot, but we've got to find how best for hit that person to get there.
That is Chant Reeves. I love that. Guys like me, you, it's a dictatorship. Come on, do what I tell you to do, and maybe your game will improve, and hopefully it will down the road. Coming up, we're going to talk with Bo Welling of Bo Welling Design, who's refreshing Ocean Forest on Sea Island. And then we're going to talk with David Ulrich with Fairways for Freedom. Stay with us. We'll be back on the Back Nine Boys podcast.
Hi, this is Damon Green, PGA Tour caddy, and you're listening to me on the Back Nine Boys Off Show.
And welcome back. I'm Rich Stiles. Our next guest is working on the island at Ocean Forest. He's kind of refreshing the golf course. Should be ready sometime in the fall. It's Bo Welling of Bo Welling Design, Greenville, South Carolina. Good morning, Bo, and welcome to the show.
Thanks, Rich. Good to see you, and thanks for having me on.
It's a pleasure to have you on. I've talked to a lot of members at Ocean Forest who've been playing at Sea Island since you're kind of doing a little bit of work out there. Tell us what you're doing at Ocean Forest in the refresh.
Yeah, so it's, in essence, it's a greens complex renovation along with as well as redoing bunkers, but a big elimination of bunker square footage as well. So I'd say sort of overall, the sort of goal and objective really is to still maintain a challenging golf experience, but to really make it more playable for a broader swath of members and guests alike. So really trying to deliver more value to the membership on a long-term basis, as well as dealing with some infrastructure issues with the bunkers and greens.
And I also understand you're making all the tee boxes kind of like on the same level where before they weren't. And what does that do? Does that less maintenance or just make it easier for the players?
Yeah, it's sort of a thing that's happening in the industry a lot right now. We call them lawn tees or ribbon tees.
Okay.
So it's supposed to have an individual tee boxes. It's really sort of a long swath of teeing ground, kind of all connected. If you watch the U.S. Open, L.A. Country Club has a similar sort of situation.
Right.
But what we like about it is it really gives a lot of variety in terms of how the golf course can be set up, as well as a lot of optionality of where people can play from. So the net of all of this is that they'll be teeing ground much more forward than there used to be, as well as having more ways to set the golf course up. So it's a way of sort of addressing accessibility as well as variety.
All right, I've got a question. This has been on my mind for a long time, and now that we're talking about tee boxes, sometimes you play with a bunch of buddies and they'll say, oh man, you know, they set up the tee boxes to point you in the wrong direction. I mean, just to kind of challenge your swing to see if you can, you know, decide where you need to go. Is that really done, or is it just in us amateurs' minds, is that just like fiction and we just really don't know what we're doing?
Yeah, I mean, I would say that in a traditional tee in ground situation, a tee box, the alignment of that is something that we try to align down the center of the golf hole. So
okay.
I don't know of any architect doing it to sort of trick anyone, like intentionally, so that it would. But mistakes do happen from time to time. Every once in a while, we might go slightly off center. Just like if there were, say, a hazard, lost ball hazard on one side, we might direct the tee slightly away from that. But generally speaking, we try to direct down the hole. Now, having said that, these ribbon tees or lawn tees are more are going to be less aligned. It's going to present almost like fairway with the ability to put a tee in the ground.
Okay.
And out at Ocean, less of an alignment situation.
Okay, and out at Ocean Forest, you're not doing much to the layout, but you're doing a lot to the bunkers and to the greens and the tee boxes.
That's right. So the routing doesn't change at all, but we have cleared some areas, so the views and the vistas are going to be much more dramatic.
Right.
We also have removed a lot of hard surface cart path, and are introducing a more sandy waste kind of area, like underneath the big majestic oak trees where it's hard to grow grass.
Right.
And so that will be some significant changes. The greens themselves have all been redesigned. So they were somewhat similar in size and very small before. And so now we've got a great variety of different green sizes, different green orientations. And we think this is really going to increase the shot values that are out there. At the same time, we've tried to really eliminate bunkering in front of greens such that greens can be accessible to a ball running along the ground. And I think that will be very useful at Ocean Forest, which is a windy environment. But it also just, as people get older and swing speeds get slower, balls, not only do they not go as far, the trajectory becomes flatter. And so the ability to access a green with a longer club is going to be something that's going to exist going forward at Ocean Forest, which was harder to do before. The other big thing that's been adjusted is we've totally regraded the 18th golf hole.
I was just going to ask you about that. Yeah.
Yeah. And so while the tee and the green are in roughly the same place, it's a totally new golf experience, and it's going to feel much more sort of in the dunes there along the ocean. And it could be very, very dramatic. So we're all super excited about it.
Yeah. You had to raise the fairway because it kind of slanted to the right, and all drives would kind of go that way unless you were farther left. And that green also slanted to the right quite a bit.
Yeah, so sort of the opposite now. So the green, the landing area has been perched up, so big, majestic views of the ocean, but it's more of a crowned sort of fairway, okay, a flattish crown. So definitely there'll be balls that could kick left, and that could even kick into sand dunes or roll out into a sandy area. But then the green itself is basically cantered right to left, and it sort of wraps around a new exposed big sand waste area, sort of a blowout of a dune kind of thing, but it'll be accessible with a running shot to play on the right side and have the ball, go towards the left side pins.
Okay, how many sand traps did you take out, and is that, it's kind of a two-part question, and is that now the trend to take out sand traps and redo them and maybe not make them as hard to get out?
Yeah, so I don't know the exact number of bunkers, but in terms of square footage basis, Ocean Forest had 40 or 50,000 square feet of bunkers, and I'd say we're probably gone down to less than half of that.
Wow,
big substantial bunker square footage reduction. But what we've done, where especially around greens, where there's less square footage of bunkering, we're introducing a lot of shortcut grass slopes around greens. And so what we find is that slope actually acts like a hazard for a good player. So a pin close to a fold off, a roll off. A shot that misses a little bit can end up much farther from the pin, whereas a bunker sort of holds that shot close to a green. And a good player, like all the tour players you're just talking about, like they can head out of a bunker very easily. But a not so good player really struggles out of the sand. And so the slope actually acts as the opposite of a hazard for a not so good player, in that they can use that slope to recover to the green. So they miss the green outright. Now all of a sudden, instead of having to hit over sand, they can actually bump the ball along the ground and get up onto the green. Okay. So we really like that. We're doing a lot of this at many of our renovation projects. So in terms of the other part of your question, a lot of people around the country are reducing bunker square footage. Yeah. And I think it's mainly, it's a twofold thing. So one, I think it's a cost and labor thing. Right. So bunkers are high cost and labor is very, very challenging.
Right.
But also, every golf architect in the world says, oh, let's challenge the best players and then make it fun and enjoyable for everybody else. But people historically have gone and put a lot of sand. Well, sand, like I just mentioned, it's the opposite of that statement. So a good player can play out of the sand very easily. A not so good player can't. And so to us, bunkering is a challenging thing to kind of meet that goal and objective of trying to make something that's fun and enjoyable for everybody. So we've been involved in a lot of bunker reduction situations. And if done right, though, it doesn't mean the golf course has to be less difficult. It's just you have to put the difficulty together in a different way. And so that's another thing that's happening at Ocean Forest, is that the internal greens contouring is going to be more significant than it was before. Okay. So again, a better player looking to score is going to have to hit the ball pretty close to have a reasonable opportunity of making a putt. You hit to the other side of the green and all of a sudden, a three putt might be a possibility.
So what you're saying is that my putting won't improve when the club opens up again.
We're just going to ask you to hit it closer, Rich.
Yeah. It depends. depends on what number shot that is for me at that point.
Yeah.
You worked with Tom Fazio. He left a big impression on you and your career, but you left to follow your dream. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, I still have a wonderful relationship with Tom. You know, I feel like I've learned from a true master in golf architecture, but also just a master in life. Right. I feel like he's taught me so many things about just everything. And I'll value that experience and friendship I've had with him for forever, and enjoy seeing him every time I get the opportunity to do so. But I worked for him for just over 10 years. You know, at some point, you know, the baby bird has to get out of the nest. And I actually went to Tom and asked him, you know, about it and what I was thinking about it. And like, he helped me analyze and look at the situation and actually, you know, ultimately helped be that mother bird to help me get out of the nest. And,
yeah.
One of the funny things is that the first 3 or 4 months of the Bow Welling design existence, I actually officed in his office.
Oh,
and,
wow.
And so he was sort of very helpful to that. And, you know, it's just a great, wonderful experience. And it's also what, you know, I had the opportunity to assist at the renovation we did at Seaside, as well as the work we did at Frederica. And so to be able to come back to Sea Island, St. Simons, to be able to work in golf here at Ocean Forest, it's just bringing back so many great memories and to be back in such an awesome, special golf place.
Right.
It's really been a fun deal.
Yeah, we do have kind of a special place here. Also, I want to ask you about your holistic approach. I haven't heard those two words as far as used in a definition of what you do and how you do it. Could you explain that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that we just sort of look at the totality of everything and try to, you know, use our design skills to make things better. And so what we mean by that is, it's not just greens, tees, and bunkers. I mean, that I got involved in golf course design because a long time ago I was an okay player, and it was sort of the test of the game. And I think what I've come to realize doing this now for 27 years is that golf is so much more than greens, tees, and bunkers. You know, it's this incredible place that fosters community, fosters human relationships. And so we're really into trying to make everything work to be able to do that. And that can be simple stuff of, you know, how circulation works and whether gathering spots in and around golf,
right.
But it also translates into golf design itself of this idea of there's a broad distribution of skill levels playing golf. And so your friendships and your family may not be structured by handicap. So like, right. If you've got kids that are low handicap people and you're not, like, you still want to be able to go play golf together. And so to be able to present an experience that allows people of varying skill levels to be able to go and do that, that's something that's very important to us. And so the net of all of that is that, you know, we kind of come in and start kind of looking at everything in terms of how to put golf projects together. And sometimes this is not at Ocean Forest per se, but sometimes in other places, it relates to even work that we do around the golf course. So on amenities and things that aren't golf. So we just did a big project in Evansville Country Club in Evansville, Indiana, which they called a campus renovation. And so we relocated tennis, we created pickleball, we created all these outdoor spaces for gathering, all this other stuff. And it's funny, the commentary I'm getting from them is like, yeah, Mighty, you told us all this about how this is going to activate our club and make, you know, get all these people out there and be more active, more busy, more connections, and they're seeing it. And so that makes you feel pretty, pretty good that what you believe is it can truly happen and make a difference in people's lives.
And you've got to be adaptable. I mean, because you're working with, you know, the management or the team that has been, you know, put on to work with you. You're trying to figure out what the members want. You know, how do we do this? How do you want to do this? But you got to be pretty adaptable working with a great number of people at each course.
Yeah, I mean, that's the way we view the world, and I'm not sure everybody in my role does this, but we view our role as like an agent to help a group of people make decisions about the future.
Right.
And so, like, we're not the people that come in and tell you this is exactly what you should go and do. It's like, it's not our golf course. It's someone else's golf course. And in Ocean Forest situation, you'd have got a long history there and very active membership. And so one of the things we did, we worked hard with the ownership and you know, to try to set goals and objectives for the project. But then we went and engaged with the stakeholders, the members, and you know, and staff, and others about how do we meet these goals and objectives. And right. I think that that process of engagement with members is something that we do everywhere we work with existing clubs, and it's a process. And we're big believers in process. And I think it's one of the reasons that all of our renovation projects have come out very, very successfully, is that it's not us coming in and telling somebody what to do, but it's rather listening, educating, discussing, and having membership be a part of the process of where we get to. And speaking about Ocean Forest specifically, what's been fun, in addition to all that engagement we did before we started, what's been fun is that the range has remained open. And so many of the members come out and practice, but then they take tours of the construction. So to be able to interface and engage with membership as we're actually building it has been something that's been unique, but very, very special and very, very rewarding. And everybody seems to be super, super excited. And so I just keep saying, well, I hope that remains the case when you've got a golf club in your hand when you're back out here on Ocean Forest as opposed to sliding around in the sand. So, but anyway, it's been a fun project.
All right, we're going to change course. We're going to go to a popular Olympic sport, curling.
Sure.
One of our listeners wanted me to ask you specifically, tell me about your international leadership with the Curling Federation.
Yeah, so it's sort of a bizarre situation. So curling what some people don't know is that curling is an ancient Scottish sport, just like golf. And so they played it in northern Scotland. When it was too cold to play golf, they'd go out on frozen ponds and throw rocks and invented this game called curling, which is now a Winter Olympic sport. So I'm from Greenville, South Carolina, so not a curling hotbed of the world, but I got fascinated by it in really the Salt Lake Winter Olympics, watching on television. And I guess I'm just a curious person, but I ended up showing up at a U.S. Curling National Championship just to figure out what this was all about. And I think they were so shocked that somebody from South Carolina would do this. They kind of took me in, and it started this sort of Forrest Gump of curling experience, which ultimately led to me being elected as the president of the World Curling Federation. So last September, so I'm now I help run the International Federation, which is the IOC, the International Olympic Committee's partner for the delivery of curling at the Olympics. And I just love it. It's a fascinating sport, but even more importantly, it's this incredible community of people. And it's very obvious to me that golf and curling come out of the same sort of Scottish ether, if you will. Like, they're both angles are important in both sports. They have weird terminology and jargon. They're camaraderie based. One might argue they're both excuses to drink scotch. But they're both values. They're both values based as well, in terms of doing the right thing and making right decisions. And I think, I say it all the time that if the world had more curlers, the world would be a better place. And I actually think the same thing's true about golf. Yeah. And so it's been a real honor to step into this role. It's a huge responsibility. My wife's about to kill me that I've basically taken on a second full-time job in my very ample spare time.
Yeah.
But it's been great, and we're making a lot of big changes and evolutions in curling, and really excited about the future.
Well, it's a sport without sand traps, so that's a good thing.
That's true.
Bo, thank you for being with us. It's a pleasure. Hope we can talk with you again, and I'm greatly, as I know many are, looking forward to the finishing product at Ocean Forest.
Thanks, Rich. Thanks for having me.
All right. Take care. God bless. Next up, we're going to talk with David Ulrich with Fairways for Freedom, empowering injured veterans through the game of golf and many other things, including trips. We're going to be with him in just a minute on the Back Nine Boys Golf Podcast.
Good morning. This is David Bass. I'm the owner of Quantum Force Golf, and you're listening to the Back Nine Boys radio show.
And welcome back. I'm Rich Stiles. We are with David Ulrich. David, good morning, and welcome to the Back Nine Boys podcast.
Good morning, Rich. Thank you very much for having me on.
All right, tell us a lot about, what you're doing, I think, is phenomenal. But tell us, our listeners may not be aware, but we'd really like to inform them about Fairways for Freedom.
Okay, Fairways for Freedom is a 501c charity. Everybody that's on the staff is doing it voluntarily. It was started by the founders and directors, Roger Schiffman, who is a managing editor for Golf Digest magazine for 35 years, and his wife, Patricia Donnelly, who is a PhD in psychology. The way it started was back in 2012-ish, The travel tourism industry of Ireland reached out to Golf Digest magazine and said, can we find some veterans to come over and do a trip? We're trying to bolster our reach overseas in America to get the tourism up.
Right.
So they happily got together with some veterans and brought it over to Ireland. And, Roger was covering the piece on it with Golf Digest magazine. And, they saw how it affected the veterans positively with suffering from, the invisible wounds and wounds of combat. And they said, hey, wait a second, we might have something here. And, right then and there, Fairways for Freedom was born. So they came back to the States and established Fairways for Freedom. And what we do is, I'm a combat wounded veteran myself. I'm a Bronze Star Purple Heart recipient. I wanted to join forces with them because I just recently moved down to St. Simons Island.
Welcome.
And I wanted to go through as a participant. So these people tend to think that it's a golf trip with a bunch of veterans, and that's not it at all.
Right.
It's a healing retreat that focuses on golf as a microcosm of the healing process. Patricia is a certified, licensed sports psychologist and also a nutritionist. She's a yoga instructor with the Veterans Yoga Program, and we do this through holistic healing. So we do these retreats at really nice resorts, and we focus on meditation, yoga, fitness, nutrition, mindfulness. And then we also do group therapy. The veterans get together, we do group therapy and one-on-one therapy with Patricia or Dr. Donnelly if she sees it fit.
Right.
I recently just did a trip up in Vermont at the Equinox, and it changed my life, but it changed the way I want to live my life. And
wow.
It's not just about the golf. The golf is kind of like what Ricky Fowler just said when he won last week. It's not all about the golf.
Yeah.
There's way more to it. And the bonds that we connect with each other, a bunch of, eight other combat wounded veterans, we get together and we talk about, stuff that, we don't normally talk about with our spouses or our family members. And it's a really great opportunity to get out into that environment and clear your head, eat very, very healthy food, have a really safe environment to be vulnerable and work on yourself.
Yeah. Unbelievable. First off, thank you for your service. Thank you for all that you've done and all the people that belong to this. Give us the website so our listeners can go to it.
It's fairwaysforfreedom.us.
Fairwaysforfreedom.us. And
yes.
You have some trips. You just talked about the one you took up to Vermont, but you've got some incredible trips coming up for next year.
We do. We actually have one trip remaining this year, which we have an ambassador spot open. If there are any listeners who are interested in becoming an ambassador would financially be responsible for themselves and one other veteran. We don't like to use the word sponsor because it's a little impersonal. So if we use the word ambassador, they're
cool.
Taking part in the program. So that trip is in September. I know it's really quick, but that's in Southeast Ireland this coming September.
Neat.
So if you want to go to the website, if anybody's listening that's interested, fairwaysforfreedom.us. And we have next year, we're very excited to announce that we are doing a trip here on Sea Island.
Awesome.
So,
awesome.
Yes.
And to be an ambassador, you just have to take care of your expenses and a veteran.
There's a little more to it than that. There's
a
vetting process also.
Right.
But, yes.
Awesome. Awesome.
And, well, and we encourage the ambassadors to take part in the program as well.
Yeah.
Excluding the group therapy. But the ambassadors we just had in this last trip, they partake in the mindful yoga, the fitness yoga, and those, it only helps them in the long run.
David, I cannot thank you enough. I do want to do a follow-up interview with you after your trip that's coming up to Ireland in September. But thank you for informing us, giving us more information, and definitely going to try and help and do what we can.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Rich.
All right. David Ulrich with Fairways for Freedom. Fairwaysforfreedom.us. Check it out. A great organization empowering and injured veterans and get them back into society through and with helping at the game of golf. Thanks for listening to the Back Nine Boys. Check us out. Come back. See us next week.
Styles. Go to back9boys.com for all things golf whenever you want it. We'll be back next week with an all-new Back Nine Boys at back9boys.com.